Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
1, 2.
Ladies and gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1324. This is your host, Danny Pena, and joining me this episode is Paris Lilly. Paris, what's up, man?
Hey, Welcome back. Good morning. Good morning.
How's everything, man?
It's good. It's good. Fun night watching WrestleMania, the Royal Rumble, and watching the Lakers at Golden State. So, good.
Good, good. Yeah, you know what? Man, I wish we could go to WrestleMania. We had so much fun. I can't believe it's going to be a year ago.
I know.
Let me tell you, that was so much fun going there. We had our own suite. We had like how many people? Yo, it was a lot.
Yeah,
and it was actually cheaper. It was actually cheaper to do that as a group than buying individual tickets.
Mm-hmm. And we had like perfect view. Like it was everything was perfect, man. It was good. Mm-hmm. Both nights. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Both night. Which one was your favorite night? First or second night?
Night two. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, thanks for the resub, Arctic. Yeah, that's also for those people watching our live recording here on Twitch. So shout out to everyone. But head over to gamertagradio.com. Put your comments and feedback. You can listen to our past episodes. Also, you can find us on any podcast app. All you have to do, just search for Gamertag Radio. We're there. And also, if you're on Spotify, you could join our weekly pool. So every week I post a pool. I don't mention it on the podcast. It comes up when I'm editing the show. I'm like, all right, this will be the question for the week. So Paris, this is what I posted last week, the last week's episode. Are you excited to play Power World? 36.4% says yes, 36.4 says no. It's a tie. And also 27.3% said maybe. I was very curious. I tried. Not my thing. How was for you? And what are your thoughts about it? It's very even, the answers here.
I mean, it seems to be a sensation. I know a lot of people like it, but just like you, I couldn't get into it. But I guess you got to get past that early part before it really opens up. So I don't know. I'll probably give it another shot. Not to mention, I played it on Xbox. I didn't play it on Steam. And the Xbox version is behind. But you also got to remember, this is all early access stuff. So, you know, we'll see. I saw the roadmap of the stuff that they're looking to do. So it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, definitely. All right. So also, if you guys would like to be part of our family discussion, and we need questions here, man. We have one for this episode. But if you guys would like to be part of a family discussion, questions, comments, anything, here's how you can contact us.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so first thing first, I think this just came up recently because I saw a lot of those tweets yesterday about it. So Suicide Squad comes out in a couple of days, I believe, like February 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
February 2nd, yeah. Hopefully we'll get ours. We don't know yet because we're still waiting. But there's been discussion where supposedly IGN is not getting codes or not getting codes early. I don't know the whole story behind it, but the only thing I know is WB Games invited IGN a couple weeks back to play the game, and IGN didn't like the preview. They just posted about it. There was like a big thing online. Some people were saying, oh, they sent somebody that doesn't know how to play the game, and so on. I disagree. I think they just didn't like the game. That's what I think. Because you don't have to be top player, best video game player to play these games when you get with the previews. I don't agree with that. But anyways. So my question to you, Paris, is like, do you think this is the right move from WB not sending it? Or I personally think that it might be similar to what happened years ago when the first Destiny game came out. Everybody got the codes, I believe. I think the day of or a couple hours before everything went online, because this is a live service game. So it might be that everybody's going to get these codes super couple hours before the official launch of the game, I think personally. So, but do you think it's that?
No, I don't think this is similar to Destiny. Destiny was different, and they always do this, by the way, but it's different because it is a massively online co-op experience, right? PV experience. So you need a bunch of people playing at once to be able to truly, quote unquote, review the game or be able to give an opinion on it versus just a handful of people. The Suicide Squad thing. So a couple things on that. Mm-hmm. I personally don't agree with IGN coming out and saying, hey, they're going to not giving us a code at all. I don't think you need to say that. Just say, hey, we won't have, you know, we aren't getting codes early. We'll have a review out later. Because look what it does when you say all that. You see what everybody's saying online, and that just the whole bickering back and forth. And you're IGN, you don't deserve one because you gave Starfield a 7 out of 10. Like, you see all that nonsense. It doesn't matter. The truth of the matter is this. We don't have review codes. Nobody has review codes right now because WB is purposely holding back review codes of that game, because you could turn the servers on early because it's co-op, you know, like a 4-player co-op game. So you could have this. It could be online right now. And we could be playing it. You're not doing it because it's probably not going to score well. Let's just be truthful here. We saw another recent example of this with Redfall. We didn't get codes until a couple days before because they did not want, and the embargo was I think at launch, right? They didn't want you giving an early opinion on the game because they knew it was going to be negative. And that's probably what's going to happen with Suicide Squad. That's just the truth of the matter. People are going to agree or disagree with me all they want. But if you're super confident about a game, if you feel really good about a game, I'll give you as an example. I don't know. Well, hell, even Starfield, Spider-Man 2, just off the top of my head, we had those games weeks in advance, and the embargo was plenty of time before the game came out to the public because they were confident in those games and what they thought the scores were going to be. When you see an embargo happen at launch, or you don't get code until right before launch, it's because they don't want negative reviews because they're not confident in the game. And look, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Well, I know people were playing NDA, say they really like it, stuff like that, and that's fine. I have not played it, so I don't have an opinion. I'm just going by the perception of what I've seen that I'm thinking, I don't know about this. I'm not excited for Suicide Squad. Let's put it that way. From what I've seen, I don't think it's going to be something that I would have expected coming from Rocksteady making a superhero game, right? Batman, Superman, all that stuff. So, I mean, it just... I just don't think it's going to score well. That's what I ultimately think it comes down to. So they're holding out code and embargo until the very last minute because they want to try and get as many early sales as they possibly can. That's what I personally think. When I play the game, maybe my opinion changes and maybe I'm more positive on it. But just the perception of everything that I've seen leading up to launch makes me think that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And the other day, I was actually watching a live sponsor stream, and it was with Dr. Lupo and a couple other content creators. They were all playing Suicide Squad. And I was like, okay. Like, at first, I remember way before when the game got announced and they show it, I wasn't too excited about it. But I'm like, oh, you know, I'm curious. I'll play it. I'm very curious to see, one, the amount of content available in the game when you play it, because that's the thing about live service games that people finish it so quickly, there's nothing else to do. Yeah. You know, we had a couple games like that, Paris, right? That eventually we moved on. There was nothing really to play in there, you know?
But yeah.
The game remind me kind of like, has like that Crackdown vibe a little bit from like the old, like, I don't care about the story. I just want to jump around and shoot and this and that. You know, so we'll see what's going to happen once the game comes out.
Yeah, we'll see when it comes out. But one other thing I want to add to that is the fact that, you know, again, what IGN coming out saying that they're not going to give us a review code at all. Again, here's just the truth of how all this works. None of these publishers, it is not a right that we get a review code. Any of these publishers at any time can refuse us a review code for whatever reason they may have. And we've seen various iterations of this throughout the years where certain publications will not get a review code for whatever reason. But that doesn't mean we have a right to a review code. If you want to review the game, you go buy the game and then you go play it and you review it. That's just the truth. It is a privilege that we get early access to these games. I don't care who you are. It could be us, IGN, the game. It doesn't matter, you know, your size of your outlet or whatever should not determine that it is your right to get a review code. If a publisher decides, yeah, we're not going to give you one, then you just don't get one. You go get the game, you go review it. Again, the truth of the matter is you want early access because that's how you generate the most engagement. AKA money. It's about money at the end of the day, all this stuff. If you have an early access code and you have an early review ready at embargo to go out, you're going to get eyeballs on your review. Now, there's certain outliers out there people who are trusted, no matter when they put a review out, people are going to want to go see what they say. You know, where it doesn't matter if you get it early or not. They want to know what your opinion is. I'm going to give you an example. Skill Up, love Ralph to death. Ralph comes out with a review. I tend to watch his reviews because I like his reviews. I want to know his opinion on things. And you'll see that throughout the industry where certain people, they're going to want to go and see what that person had to say about a game because they respect their opinion. So that's all this really truly comes down to is IGN not getting an early review hurts their bottom line, period. But at the same time, nobody's getting an early review. So it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, we still to this day, there's games that we haven't gotten no codes and we're like, right, you know, I'll buy it if we're interested. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's not like it happens. It's not like companies need to send, they have to send us codes. No, if they say no, hey, that's their choice. We keep it moving.
And look, to keep myself honest here, you know, in the past, I have complained online about not getting a review code or access to something. I specifically remember, was it the first Last of Us or it was something naughty, a Naughty Dog game. I remember openly complaining about, you know what? I think it was the Last of Us 2 because I think we didn't get invited to the preview event that was in LA. Right. And you saw all these different people going to it and you weren't living in LA at the time, but I was, and I complained about it in public, you know, and I remember a certain, I won't even say his name, but a certain person who we may or may not like each other called me out on it. And you know what? He was right. I shouldn't complain. it is not my right to be able to go to any preview event, review event, get a code, any of that kind of stuff. If you get the opportunity to go, you take advantage of it. If you don't, then you don't. But if you want to cover a game, like I said, you spend your own money and you go do it. Period, point blank. So that was a lessons learned from me, for me, you know, from some years back. And that always sticks out in my head. So, yeah, when I see stuff like this, I agree. You shouldn't be complaining because nobody owes you anything. They don't have to give you anything. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder who it was. Now I'm curious. I'm very curious.
I'm not going to say his name just because it's.
You should.
Yeah. He's controversial.
Oh, all right.
But he was right.
Okay. All right. Are we going to move on here? But yeah, let us know your thoughts, guys. I know everybody has like different opinions about it. And look, if we get a code to review again, we'll be honest and we'll talk about it on the next episode. All right, so we'll see. All right, so we're going to continue about, according to Paris, Super Nintendo Switch or Switch 2 or whatever name it is. Nobody knows the official name of it. This is a rumor, though, by the way. It's not official, but it looks like it's going to have an 8-inch LCD screen. And and it's going to cost, of course, like $400, something like that. I was looking at I wanted to see what people have been saying about this rumor. And a lot of people are kind of disappointed. They wanted to see like an OLED version. I'm like, bro, like no matter what it is from Nintendo, we're going to be the first ones buying it. If you see that Mario game, that Zelda game, whatever they're going to show, you're going to get hype. You're going to pre-order it. Right now, people are just complaining. And I remember back in the days, people even complained the name of the GameCube. They didn't like the name of the GameCube when it came out. GameCube? No. At that time, we were so used to the project name, I think it was called Revolution, something like that. And when we saw the official name, when they announced it at a press conference, people were mad about that too, man. I think we're way too picky. Like, we want certain things, man. And then, because of Nintendo, it doesn't really happen like that, you know. But I think I'm fine with this. I just want to see battery life, the controllers, the games. Is it good? Is it going to be worth for me to pay $400? I'm okay that this is going to have, if this happens, an LCD screen. What about you, Paris?
I do want to clarify one thing that you just said. Project Revolution was the Wii.
The Wii.
Project Dolphin. Dolphin was the GameCube.
Hey, man, look. We've been there so long.
I know. Trust me. I had to go look just now to double check. I was like, wait, wasn't that the Wii? But to your point, yeah, I had put out like a funny tweet and I had even said, I go, my dumb ass is going to go buy the LCD Switch at launch. And then 2 years later, I'm going to go buy the OLED version. It is what it is. And you know, and then people come in the comments, this is BS. They shouldn't be doing this. Here's the truth of the matter. Number one, like I have like the ROG Ally. I got the original Switch, all that LCD screen's fine. I'm not looking at that screen going, gosh darn it, this should be OLED. I'm not mad. I mean, obviously, yeah, obviously, you want an OLED one, but Nintendo has always sold their hardware at a profit. They make money off of it. They always have. That's just, they've been consistent throughout the years. They never sell their hardware at a loss. They clearly don't want to put it beyond that $400 price point, because I think that's kind of at the top for them. I don't think they want to go above that. LCD is cheaper than OLED. That's just the truth of the matter. Plus, it's easier from a supply standpoint to get than OLED. So what's going to happen? You're going to get the LCD one at launch. And then a couple years later, as other parts inside the Switch start to get cheaper to manufacture, you know, supply, all of that, It's going to be cheaper to have a Switch. Now you introduce an OLED screen with cheaper other internal parts being cheaper, and you could still sell it at $399, lower the price of the LCD one. And they're still making money on both. That's what they're going to do. And people like us, we're going to go buy the OLED one. We are. We just are. I saw people, well, I'm just going to wait on the OLED. Good freaking luck. No, you're not.
Yeah.
Look, I'm telling you right now. They're going to show that 3D Mario. Ain't nobody going to be talking about, well, gosh darn it, I need an OLED. They're going to go, damn, I need to play that 3D Mario. This is what's going to happen. And I say it half joking, half serious, because It's just the reality of it. It's this is how this works. I mean, go back to the original Switch. They ain't put no OLED in that one. They waited, what, 3 years before the OLED came out or however long it was?
I think a little bit more than that.
And I remember saying to myself, ain't no damn way I'm buying that OLED. Screw that. I'm keeping the one I got. I'm not getting an OLED Switch. I'm not going to get one. I got one.
But to be fair, for my story, I got it from Nintendo. So it's not like I had a pre-order and then they were going to send me a new one. I'm like, yeah, you know what? Might as well. Why I'm going to have two?
That doesn't count.
What do you mean doesn't count?
Because they gave you one.
But I had one pre-ordered.
No.
I had one pre-ordered and I had to cancel. I didn't know I was going to get one.
Hey, I bought mine with my money. Okay.
Well, congratulations.
Give me nothing.
Well, congratulations. Nah, but bro, people are still gonna buy this, man.
It's just people online. And look, I get it. Of course, I wouldn't want an OLED one at launch. But excuse me, do you want to pay $500 for it? No,
yeah.
I don't, because that's what would happen. They would raise the price of the Switch to compensate for the more expensive OLED screen. That's just the truth of it. They're not going to, well, let's give the customers a discount. Hell no. Nintendo's never done that. So I don't expect it now. So look, the LCD screen is going to be fine. I'm not, like, I even think about the PlayStation Portal. That's an LCD screen. I think it's 8 inches. Pretty sure it's 8 inches. Looks great. I'm not looking at that screen going, gosh darn it, it should be OLED. I'm not even thinking that. I'm just, hey, it's fine. Like I said, that Mario's coming out.
Oh, I'm in.
Day one. That's all I know. Look, I'm more concerned about the game. If the game looks amazing, which I'm expecting it will be, I will be getting a new Switch at launch. 100%.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, Paris. The majority of people, do they play on the go on a TV?
You know, it's interesting. Like, I'll just, for myself, I find myself playing on mobile.
More
than TV.
But we travel a lot.
Even in the house. I'm just saying. Like right now, I could pop this Switch in and play right now, but I'll just turn it on and start playing. I don't even think about it.
I think the majority of the time is here at the house. I have it connected to the TV when I travel, or in my case, when we had Violet, our baby, we were taking care of her, and when she was asleep, I'm like, hey, you know what? I think this is a perfect time for me to play Super Mario Bros. Wonder. So that's how I finish it. But the majority of the time, I have it connected to the TV.
Yeah. And, I mean, you know, like my original Switch, I just gave it to my son. Mm-hmm. You know? So it still gets used. It's all good. Yeah. But, yeah, I just think this is a why is anybody shocked kind of thing. Of course it was going to be OLED at launch. And then they'll introduce another model a few years from now, and they're going to make money, and you're going to get people that double dip. That's just how it works. Again, look at Nintendo's track record with their handheld devices. They've done it with Game Boys. Remember the original Game Boy, Game Boy Color, all this stuff. It was a Game Boy Mini or whatever the heck it was called.
There was a Game Boy DX.
That one. And then, you know, when the DS came out, there's all kind of variants of the DS that's out. Even with this last Switch, you got the original Switch, you got... It was like some internal hardware upgraded one they did. I forget what it was, but it was a little bit better battery or something like that. Then you got the Switch Lite, and then you got the OLED. So that's like, what, four variants of the original Switch that are out right now. So, of course, they're going to do that again. Won't be shocked
at all. Now, when is the right time to release this console? Okay, you know what? Forget that. When is the right time to announce it?
I think they do it next month, or not next month, March. I think March.
March, and then way into September.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like that for the Switch. It wasn't like that. It was like they announced, they had a trailer, I think September, had a press conference. Was it October, November?
No,
and then it was available in March. January.
That. Yeah.
January. So it was actually 2 months before the pre-orders went live. So I think that's way too far if they show it in March.
You ask my opinion and then you poo-poo all over it.
Yes, because it's a different time. So I just can't see them having it for that long. I don't know. I personally, for me, have a special Nintendo Direct, like a showcase in June.
No.
Or July, around there, and have it launched in September.
No.
Oh, God. So what is it?
Because why compete against Summer Game Fest? Why put it on June?
Bro, it's Nintendo. Do you think Nintendo? Well, Jeff Keighley, they're not going to care. It's Nintendo. See, they're not going to care.
I like what this person said in the chat. They go, Nintendo can literally do whatever they want and they still win. And that's the point. They're going to announce it when they want to announce it. Whenever. Yep. I agree.
Look, I remember watching that press conference 1 o'clock in the morning for the Switch because it was live in Tokyo in Japan. I stayed up and I was waiting for hours trying to pre-order that system through Amazon and other places because I was just following the web. Everybody was talking about it on social media. I just can't see this. Like, let's partner with Jeff Keighley. That's not going to happen.
No.
They're going to do their own thing.
But that's my point. That's my point. I think you get out ahead of it. I'm gonna revise what I said, and I'm gonna say late April, May. That's what I think.
Late April, May, and then release in September,
and it comes out in September. Launches.
Okay, how about this?
With Mario.
I kind of agree with you. So it will be a trailer around April, May, showcase, maybe a month or two after that. And then pre-order goes live, and then have in September. Make sense or no? Because that's what they did last time. They just released a video, and we had it for like 2 months.
Do you do two different things? I can see them do two different things. You have a thing. And see, I wish I could go back and remember how they did it with the original Switch. But I think you show off the hardware. And you kind of show various games in there, but you don't go in depth with them, right? And then in the summer, right before launch, you do a full-on Nintendo Direct for Mario. Like, showing off Mario. Like, kind of like they just did with this last 2D Mario, where you have a Nintendo Direct that's just about the games and not about the hardware.
Yeah. But they never done that, though.
That's what I mean. I can't remember. Because with the original Switch, they just... Was it hardware and they just showed all the games at once? I can't remember.
All in one. All the new features, everything you could do in there. The controller, everything. And they also had a special event for East Coast, the media in New York City. And they also got to play hands-on hours later, East Coast. So I remember that. We didn't get invited.
Now, do you do something? I'm thinking the quote-unquote September release. Do you do something at PAX?
Why PAX?
Because Nintendo's in Seattle.
Well,
didn't they just do something to last PAX? I thought they just did something.
But it was partnered with it, but it was like their own event. It was like
PAX. I'm saying because people are up there, right?
Yeah.
So you just do something then. Media's up there and you have their own event, blah blah blah.
Like a hands-on type thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you cut me off all the time. So what's the difference?
Look, I was about to say that whatever they're going to show us, they're going to show us a launch window. It's not all the games on launch and that's it.
I agree.
And I hope that we'll get to see games that's coming out that year. When the Switch came out, every month there was an exclusive game only on the Switch. Every month there was something for a whole year. And I hope they could do that same exact thing. That was very, very exciting. They released a Mario game. They had a Mario Kart. They had a whole bunch of stuff, man. And it was a lot of fun. So, and there was a couple of games that came out on the Wii U. They released it on the Switch too. Yeah, go ahead. Now you can say it.
Wow, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to talk now. Now I can say it.
You're welcome.
No, all I was going to say was I just think Nintendo's going to dominate this holiday. Kind of what you're saying. Like, you have a Mario come with it right at launch, but then throughout the rest of the holiday window, you'll have other games coming out too. I'm sure we're going to see some third-party partnerships. Now, I know this is a slight transition, but it's still relevant to Nintendo. Do you think Microsoft or Xbox has Call of Duty for this holiday on the Switch, on the new Switch.
I 100% agree. I think they are going to. I can see it. I can 100% see it. It makes sense to release it for the first time. Remember, was it a few months ago we saw last week? Or not last week, last year, we saw that tweet from Phil. They're going to be committed to release Call of Duty games on Nintendo consoles. I think this will be the first one. Now, plus, it's more powerful, too.
Now, I'm going to, and again, we can stick with Nintendo, but this is integrating Xbox into this slightly and just some of the drama we've seen over the past few weeks. My prediction, you're going to see Hi-Fi Rush.
Yeah.
And one other Xbox game on Switch at launch.
Sea of Thieves.
Maybe, maybe not. Now, my dream scenario, I'm not saying it's going to happen, just my dream, because I do think this will happen when it eventually comes out. Mm-hmm. Banjo's going to be on that Switch.
So you think, wait a minute, hold on, pause on that one. Do you think they're going to release Banjo date to date, Xbox, PC, and Switch?
Wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me. Your original Banjo was a Nintendo title. That core audience came from Nintendo. They've already done partnerships like what Banjo's and
Smash.
Yes, and Smash. Why not?
And the release of the Nintendo 64 game.
Take your console brand loyalty nonsense out of this. Think logically from a business standpoint. Just from a business standpoint. If you want Banjo to truly succeed, because all I hear from Ryan McCaffrey and Britt and all these other people telling me Banjo ain't relevant no more. Ain't nobody buying Banjo. Well, then gosh darn it, put it on as many platforms as you can then. Why not put it on the Nintendo platform? That's all I'm saying. So sure, it's on the Xbox, it's on the PC, cloud stream and all that, but why not have a version of that same Banjo game on the new Switch? Why not?
You know what, Paris, I think you also should say, like, you know, because I have a source that told me, you know, I think that's like the hot thing now to say on the podcast.
You trying to get me in trouble because you know what I want to say and I'm not going to say it.
I'm not going to say it, though. It's all good. It is funny, though. It is funny. But, yeah, I can see that. I can see the Banjo date-to-date Switch and Xbox. I can definitely see it. And you know what's going to be the sad part? I think the Switch version is going to outsell the Xbox.
But this is my point. That's my point. If you're telling me that Banjo isn't going to sell well if it's exclusive to Xbox, put it on that Switch and watch how it sells. That's all I'm saying. And again, I'm looking at this as if I'm trying to make the most money possible. That's me trying to make the most money possible. And that's just the reality of this, of how you got to look at it. And then look, we could keep talking about Nintendo if you want, but just transition into all this Xbox stuff, you know, it's been interesting to just see the various opinions over the past few weeks about this and, you know, how Xbox is going to handle having games on other platforms and stuff like that. I will say again, I'm sorry, my lizard brain just tries to look at this, you know, as the most logical way possible. There's going to be some games that Xbox Game Studio makes, Activision, Blizzard, Bethesda, etc., that are going to show up on other platforms. That is just the reality that we're in now. Whether you like it or not, whether you want to go dig up a tweet that I put out in 2018 or whatever, I'm just telling you the reality of what it is in 2024. That's going to happen. It's going to happen. So I would say just get ready for it. And this has nothing to do with brand loyalty. It has nothing to do with anything. It's just where the business is going. And here's the other thing. It's not just Xbox doing this. Take that for as you will.
Let me ask you, do you see Nintendo doing that?
Not Nintendo. Nintendo, I love when people love to throw Nintendo into this argument. Well, then why doesn't Nintendo put their games on the Xbox or the PC? But Nintendo, because here's the difference. Here's the difference that people just need to get through their heads. Mm. Nintendo synergizes their games with their hardware, because their hardware always does something unique that the games take advantage of. That's and clearly from a sales standpoint, they don't have the incentive to do that because their hardware sells, they make money off of the hardware, and their games, their attach rate to their hardware is significantly higher than you see for an Xbox or a PlayStation game.
Yeah, it just facts.
And that's how you got to look at it. So you, we can do the whataboutisms all we want, but that's not Nintendo's business model. And they don't have the incentive to put their games on PC or Xbox or PlayStation. But Xbox and PlayStation has the incentive to put their games on other platforms. And that's just where we are. Again, I hate leaks, not promoting it or anything, but we've obviously all seen them. You saw the Insomniac leak. You saw the attach rate of their games. Wasn't there. And we already know Phil Spencer himself has come out and talked about Xbox games. So we know. Again, that's just the reality that we're in.
Yeah, yeah. And next time, don't point at me, man. Just saying. No, you're 100%. 100%. Here's the thing, though. I know Nintendo tried to experiment with mobile.
Yeah. It didn't work.
Didn't work. I think maybe one or two games worked out, but they moved them from that. But I could honestly, Paris, I could see Nintendo maybe releasing some games, not day to date, some games on Steam, like in the future, just as like an experiment. I could definitely see that.
2026.
Why 2026?
Remember?
By source.
No, remember.
That's funny. I know what you're talking about. Okay. All right. All right. Now, I'm going to skip one of the topics here because I think there's a question that's about this, so we'll probably bring it up later. But Sony is reportedly bringing Until Dawn to the PS5 and PC. Now, I love Until Dawn. Love the game. I'll play it again on a PC or on a PS5. It's gotten to the point like, bro, Where the new games is getting, it's a lot of old games coming back to PlayStation 5. I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts about it. For me, it's just it's like money. Too much.
It's money.
Of course, it's money. I know it's money. Everything is money. It's not because of come on, but I think this is gonna be a very light year for PlayStation. I think.
Well, clearly we're already seeing that. I mean, if it wasn't gonna be a light year, we'd know it. They tell us. That's the thing about this.
Just see it.
people that are hoping and praying for the secret showcase that PlayStation got, stop holding your breath. That's just how I look at it. Because if they had this big lineup coming this holiday, they'd have told you already. They'd have told you last year. They'd already told you. And that's how you got to look at it. They would have said it already. And again, I hate leaks, but the truth is, Wolverine ain't coming. Not this year.
It's going to be a while.
Yeah, so what is there? This is why you're seeing The Last of Us 2 come out now on PS5, and it will be on PC at some point this year as well. This is why you're getting Until Dawn coming to PS, yeah, and going to PC. This is why you're getting Horizon Forbidden West coming to PC this year. It's like, let's take what we have and let's maximize the most that we can from a revenue standpoint. And we don't have anything big. We don't have a Spider-Man 2 coming from our internal studios this year. So you do what you got to do. Obviously, you and I went to a Final Fantasy VII Rebirth event this year. We'll talk about impressions, at some point in the future. But this is what they're doing, a third-party partnership, stuff like that. That's just what PlayStation is in 2024. I'm not saying it's a good or a bad thing. I'm just saying it is what it is. So anybody expecting Uncharted 12 ain't coming this year.
Not coming.
It just isn't.
You know what's weird? And it's been kind of quiet with PlayStation 2. Yo, VR, like what's up with that? Like they promoted it hard and then it's just been quiet for months.
You know, it's funny. Like I said, a year ago, and you know me, I've been talking about this forever. I was like, I'm not doing VR. I'm waiting till 2.0 kind of thing, blah, 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 blah. PlayStation VR 2 was my first entry point into VR. I played Horizon I was going to be a smart ass, but I play Horizon Call of the Mountain, you know, and got a great workout climbing because goddamn, that's all you do in that game. And a couple other, you know, the Star Wars stuff and whatever. And it was cool, like, as my entry into VR. Like, wow, oh, wow, I see the potential of VR. This is really cool. Can't wait till some more games come out for it. And then it's just been crickets. There had just hasn't been a lot of compelling stuff on PlayStation VR. And then, you know, Xbox and Meta sent me that Meta Quest 3 game. Now I really see what VR could be. Playing Half-Life Alyx, my God. And playing Asgard's Wrath 2 on excuse me, I'm still getting over being sick. Sorry. But playing those, that truly showed me what VR could be, right? And that's kind of it. It's just nothing else. And again, if there was something big coming for PlayStation VR 2 this year, they'd have told you already. And they're not telling us anything. So I'm not holding my breath on it. I hate to say this, and I'm not trying to be negative Nancy on anyone that got it. I just don't know what you're going to get for PSVR 2 this year that would make someone that doesn't have a VR 2 already want to go buy a VR 2. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah. And I know in a chat we had someone that said that PlayStation didn't promote it to VR that hard. Now, I agree and I disagree. The reason why I'm saying that is because when it was coming out, a bunch of creators got hands-on. They got the device early for us to talk about it on our channels, social, podcasts, YouTube, etc. And I've never seen that amount of creators with stuff like that from PlayStation. I'm like, wow, they're really going all out, you know, sending these products out to people. Plus I got to see like ads on YouTube here and there, you know, during that time. And after that, once it was launched, and actually the ads I was seeing was the Horizon VR game. That's the one I was seeing that everywhere promoted. After that, crickets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened. It's just the thing was very expensive. Like if you're buying it like that, how much was it? Like what? $400 The VR 2?
$399, right?
Yeah, it's expensive. I'm like, wow. How much is the one that you have, Paris? The MetaQuest one?
I think it's $5.
Oof.
I think.
VR's expensive.
Again, you know, just being upfront. I mean, it was provided to me by Meta. I didn't pay for it, but I'm pretty sure it's $500.
Yeah, it's a lot. I don't know. We'll see. Now, another thing I want to bring up, Paris, because like I've been busy, you know, as a new parent, haven't really been checking out the news as much. But I read about Halo Infinite not getting any more seasons. It's more a different way they're gonna be having content now in the game, which I'm fine with it, because I feel like once I'm done with the season, I'll play the game. But you know, but what you think about that? The changes they're making now with Halo Infinite.
You know, it's interesting, and shameless plug, I interviewed Brian Gerard over on XCast back in December, kind of hinting at some of this stuff. So if anyone hasn't checked that out, you should. And they made fun of it in the stream because it's like called the CU29 is what the update is. So it's content update number 29. That's what it stands for. You would think they would have come up with a more clever name than that. I don't know why you can't still call it a season. But the truth of it is, I mean, they're transitioning away from Infinite. I mean, they're still going to support it, obviously, Forge, and, you know, they'll have some updates here and there and things like that with the battle passes. But I mean, they're transitioning into the next phase of Halo. That's just the reality of what's going on. 343 got Halo Infinite into a good state PvP wise, because I freaking love it. And that was not always the case. But Infinite, the quote unquote original plan from Infinite has clearly changed. And I will say a nameless person who definitely would know told me during the Game Awards, was talking about Pierre, who's the head of 343 now, that's leading up all this stuff, saying how that dude's a freaking rock star and how happy they are with Halo under his direction and where it's going. So like I said, if you're playing, like I highly suggest, if you're not playing Infinite, play it. It's a freaking blast to play.
It's fun.
This is what we wanted that PvP to be the entire time. As far from a content standpoint, it's great. But yeah, they're moving on to the next Halo. They're staffing up for the next Halo. I mean, there's obviously rumors about with Certain Affinity being partnered up with them and what they're doing, but 343 themselves are staffing up now for the next Halo. So, I mean, I doubt we hear anything about it this year, but I would imagine probably going into 2025, they're going to start teasing that out. And, you know, a couple years after that, whatever that game's going to be, it'll be out. So yeah. Weird naming convention for the updates, but they're obviously still going to support Infinite, and that's a good thing.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're going to play this audio that I recorded a couple days ago during one of my live streams, and I had a sponsor stream from United We Dream Action. And I sat down with one of the members from the organization. We had a great conversation about gaming and, you know, his journey coming to the United States and everything. So we're going to play it right now. And after we come back, we have fan mail and much more, only here on Gamertag Radio.
So my name is Rodrigo. I live in Boston, Massachusetts. I'm undocumented. I was born and raised in Guatemala, Guatemala City. And I came to the United States when I was 16. That was about like 14 years ago. And I've been living in Boston ever since. I'm happy to join the stream. I was sharing with my coworkers that I never thought I was going to be on a Fortnite stream for work. But I'm very happy to be here. I've always been passionate about gaming. I've always been passionate about the digital work. And that's a little intro about myself. Right. So, you know, as an undocumented person, when I came to the United States, I knew that things were going to be difficult. I was coming from Guatemala, you know, trying to seek for a better life. And, you know, I came to Boston. I started like going to school. I started to, you know, figuring out like how I was going to work. And a lot of the things that that came to mind were like, okay, I need to just like do the best that I can at school. I just need to do everything that I can, and things are just gonna. I think if I work hard, things are just gonna be easy, right? Or that's what I thought. And one of the things that I realized was when I was graduating from high school was that being able to actually go to college was not going to be an option for me because, well, first, a lot of like scholarships, regardless of like what my grades were going to be closed to me as an undocumented person. I also didn't have access to like things like financial aid or how to be able to actually afford going to college. And I figured out, okay, well, now I need to find help and figure out if there's any other people, or are there any other folks that are struggling through this that I can help with? And I found out a group in Massachusetts of other undocumented people of around my same age who were like, yeah, things are very difficult, but we're not complacent with the way that things are, and we should be able to figure out a better way to work for and like change things for our people. And that's when I started organizing, and I started figuring out that organizations like United We Dream Action were not just waiting and saying like, yeah, things are difficult and things are difficult, and we're just gonna be complacent with it, but we're actually gonna work together to make sure that we change things, that things are better for immigrants, that things are better for our communities, and that people are not living in fear, and they're actually looking for solutions for our communities.
And that's one of the things too that I noticed, that you guys been also getting a different crowd now to have these type of conversations, especially gamers. Why was it so important for you and your team to start talking to the gamers about these issues?
Yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of these conversations are kind of isolated, right? Like when I was in high school, I didn't know that this group of people trying to make change existed. I thought it was just like, it was just me alone, and I didn't know anybody else who was struggling through any of this. And it's always, I think, what we're trying to do with our movement ensure that we're reaching more people, that more people know that this work is happening, that they're not alone. And if you're not necessarily like struggling with these specific things, that you can actually support other people that are going through this, because we need help.
Oh, so here's a great question for you, for me. When you discovered video games, was it in Guatemala or was it here in the United States for you?
Oh, that's an amazing question, because I've always loved gaming. I've always had like friends around the neighborhood. I used to have a PlayStation 1. That's when I discovered my love of gaming, and then I've always kind of like kept touch with it. Funny enough, I think that's actually a good question in how it intersects with immigration. Gaming is like something that I was actually not able to do for a long time because of like the struggles of being undocumented, trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, how I was going to pay rent, and like all of that stuff. There were like multiple years when I just couldn't even play one single game. And most recently, I started playing Fortnite, right? And now that this is the way in which I keep communication with my friends in Guatemala, my friends who are still in Guatemala.
Oh, that's the community, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the way that we like continue to talk. They're always playing. It's not as difficult, and we all have time to figure it out. So it's good.
Yeah, you know why I love about gaming now than back then. Gaming back then, everything was like so expensive, and you maybe one person could have like one console maybe with one game, and that's it, right? For me, I got lucky because my parents will buy me games all the time, but not everybody had the money to do that, right? But right. Now I feel like there's so many different ways for people to play games, either through mobile, through different consoles, different devices, you know. And now having free games too, which is even better. You know, people could play Fortnite for free.
Right.
Not like only for Fortnite, example, but Apex Legends or something like that, you know?
Right. Like, I know that like games and like, you know, buying a computer in Guatemala is way harder than like buying one here in the United States, right? But even with like with Fortnite, right? Like got somebody here. Even with like my friends in Guatemala, they can join in, even if they have a PlayStation 4, right? I know it's harder, but we're able to actually continue to play together, and we're able to have a communication with each other.
Yeah, and that's the beauty about gaming, man. Like it completely could change people's lives, man. You know, and when you're stressed out, I think this is like the best thing to help out to release that stress too, man. You know, so like I remember living in Dominican Republic, there was people that would play, let's say, a game like Final Fantasy, mm-hmm. and it was all in English, and they don't know English, but they figured out how to how to complete the games. And I bet it was like that too in Guatemala, right? For the kids over there, right?
I mean, I think that's how I learned the majority of my English, through just like playing Pokemon. You know, when I was little, I didn't know what the quests were, and so I was just like, okay, well, I'm just gonna have to figure out what these words are, or else I'm not gonna be able to move forward.
Yeah, and there was no like strategy guides or anything like that, like, you know, in Spanish.
Yeah, the strategy guides were also in English.
Yeah, yeah, but that's the one thing that I'm trying to do too, man. Like, I'm trying to get also more Latinos to be in the game industry, to learn how to code and make their own games. And at the same time, if they could also create a game where they could tell our story, our culture, so other people could also learn about it too, that's something that I would love to do in the future, man. Have like my own studio and let a lot of the young kids here locally in Los Angeles or in either other cities to come and create content, play some games, you know, that type of thing. So actually, there's some people that don't know about this, Rodrigo, is, you know, that Mortal Kombat, the original Mortal Kombat, was made by two Latinos.
No way. What?
Yeah. So one of them is Mexican and the other one is Dominican, Ed Boon.
Wow.
Yeah. He I had him on a show. We actually talked about that. He's actually from Dominican Republic, from Santo Domingo. He's born over there. Yeah, now he lives in, you know, lives in Chicago now. He's a lot older, yeah. But yeah, by two Latinos, man. So that's why it's important to talk about those things, man, because a lot of people don't know about that, you know. Knowledge is power, man. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power, and like it shows like our impact, like it shows like the, I think the opportunity and being able to like work with each other, the things we're able to accomplish together. Yeah, yep. That's really cool. I didn't know that. I had no idea.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, look how much of an impact that game had.
Right.
And not only in gaming, but just entertainment in general. There's movies, there's even a Broadway show back in the 90s. It wasn't all that, but still, like, there was a lot of things that they did that completely changed the entertainment industry overall, especially in gaming.
Yeah.
And it was because of two Latinos that just
that was you.
Created a game that became really popular, you know, and they're still making games to this day. All right, so is United We Dream Action a national group, or is there a network where we can find more local groups to volunteer?
Somebody asked that question there. That's a good question. It is a national group, but we work in affiliation with many other groups locally as well. So if you go to either United We Dream Action or unitedwedream.org, you should be able to find more information about like what that looks like nationally, but also how to connect with the local groups.
Mm-hmm. Like what are the, one of the things that you guys do, like an example that people were like, that's good to know. People are probably curious about it. Like the projects that you guys worked on in the past.
The projects that we worked on in the past. Well, I mean, there's a lot of like very good like local advocacy work. You know, I was mentioning earlier, like one of the challenges is like driver's licenses and things like that. There's a lot of other work that we're doing. For example, in Texas, after there's been like some anti-immigrant bills that have passed in the state. But also, we have a lot of work in our cultural work. For example, we put together last year a YouTube show for immigrants. Put together a YouTube show of immigrants, and it's like a cooking show. So we brought together like immigrants.
People love cooking. They love food.
We put together a whole cooking show. We put together like the recipes, everything that you need to be able to make the recipes. And, you know, there's like I was sharing earlier, right? Like there's a lot of like things that are like, of course, like very advocacy oriented, because we need to drive change to improve the lives of people. But we're also doing a lot of work to kind of like find that joy, find that like a space for fun. Right. And the YouTube show on cooking is like one of those things that we were able to do. I'm pretty sure. Well, don't quote me on this one, but I think we might be casting for our second season. So keep on the lookout.
Okay, cooking show, man. I hope you got some Dominicanos in there, man, so you can show how to do some arroz y habichuela and what is another one? Sancocho and all these other dishes.
So funny enough, and good thing you mentioned it, our hostess for the cooking show in the first season was Dominican. She's Dominican.
Oh, really? Nice. Oh, so it's called No Borders,
Just Flavors. No Borders, Just Flavors. That's right.
Yeah. I saw Neil posted the link to the show. That's awesome. Because I love the back and forth conversation we were having about your journey and your experience living here in the United States, you know, and I think it's been a great conversation. And plus, there's a lot of things I didn't know about United We Dream, about the cooking show and how people could volunteer and all this stuff. So that's good.
Right. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Anytime, man. Stream. Anytime.
And yeah. But yeah, like
next time, next time we probably pick another game too. Another game that you play.
Yeah, that sounds good. Whichever is your preference. This is the first time that I play and I like do the, you know, the whole like deep conversation, but I thought we did pretty fine.
Yeah, it was really good. Really good. Everybody, make sure to go to the official website or official YouTube channel of United We Dream Action. You guys could go over there and subscribe, follow. I know there's also social media, but all that you can find on the official website too. So anything else, Rodrigo?
No, that's it. Thank you for giving us a shout out. For everybody who are still watching, go to United with Dream Action, unitedwithdreamaction.org. If you go to our social medias, it's @UWD Action. And that's all across like, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok. You can also follow our sister's organization, which is United We Dream, and that one is just at United We Dream, and that's all across all the social media platforms as well. And again, thanks for having me on the stream. I'm really happy. I'm very excited. I really enjoy being here.
Yeah, and we did our thing too. It's not the only talk. We also kick butt.
Yeah,
we got good. Far. we went really, really far in the game, man. So thanks, Rodrigo, and hopefully we can do this again, man.
Amazing. Thank you for having me. Right, no, talk to you
no
later.
No problem, man. No problem. Later, bye. Man. Later. All right, everyone. Shout out to Lady Luck and also Arctic for helping moderate the chat. And thank you so much for the support. And people for asking questions, too. That was really cool.
Fanmail@gamertagradio.com.
What's going on, Gamertag Radio? How are you good brothers doing? This is Keon calling from Baltimore. I just wanted to ask you guys, we've all seen it. Microsoft, unfortunately, laying off 1,900 employees. That includes several of the studios that they own. But Microsoft isn't the only one that is guilty of this. You see it throughout the industry at a pretty rapid pace lately. So my question to you guys is, what do you guys think the future of gaming is going to look like with so many cuts happening to the industry? Could this mean a situation where there will be less AAA games, where these developers and publishers are going to take less chances of making newer games because it seems like the price or the cost of these games is going up more and more? I'm just curious to know, just overall, what do you think the impact of gaming is going to be? Not the impact of gaming, but the impact of these layoffs are going to be for gaming over the next 5 years. As always, thank you guys so much for everything that you do, and you guys take care. Have a good one. And, oh, go Ravens. Bye-bye.
Oh, he said go Ravens. He says Baltimore all the way, huh? All right. Thanks. Thanks, Keon, for sending us a question. Yeah, last week was rough, man. Actually, the whole last year was extremely difficult, man, because we have a lot of our friends that also got laid off, or they have their coworkers who – getting laid off at different studios or friends too. And it's like, it's getting to the point where, and I read this actually a couple of days ago. Can you believe, compared to 2023, in January alone has been, I think, half of it in just in a couple of weeks, half of last year's, the amount of people that got laid off. So right now, I believe it's like over 5,000. Last year was close to 10 or 10,000 or so, and we got already 5,000 in just 3 weeks in the month of January. Insane. Now, here's a couple things too that I have to say. In 2020, a lot of, and this is just in tech in general too, where a lot of companies hired, and I think a lot of them over hired too many people, that now years later it looks like, because of the remote and this and this and that, it looks like now they don't need that many people, and they're getting laid off. Now, it is difficult, man, because I've gotten laid off, I think, like maybe 3 times in my career, in my life, and it was rough, bro. It is rough. I don't know if you ever gotten laid off, Paris, in the past with any companies, but let me tell you, at first, when that happens to you, you feel like it's your fault. Like, you, damn, I messed up. Like, I remember the first time it happened to me, bro, I was depressed. I was like, man, what was it? Did I something wrong? That wasn't enough, the stuff that I was doing at work? Like, you know, but I just hope that things get better in the future, because I know it's a very difficult time for a lot of people. Now, when it comes from the consumer side, I think we're still going to get AAA games. It's not like they're going to stop. And we might see less of that and more of like AA and indie games. I can see that more of like a lower budget compared to like a AAA game. So we might see that in the future. I could definitely see that. Is the prices going to go up? I don't think so. I think it's still going to be the same, either $60 to $70, and we might see subscription services still there, like Game Pass, etc. But I just hope that it's going to be a lot easier in the future for those that are still there working on the games, man. Because when you have less people, it could get really stressful and more difficult too, man. So, Paris, you have anything to say about it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. There's various layers to this. First and foremost, yeah, I'm immediately going to have empathy for everyone that's been laid off, not only at Activision Blizzard, but just industry wide. You know, this has been going on since last year. And it's like what I had tweeted, you know, when the Microsoft thing came out was, you know, what are we doing? Ergo, if the very people that are responsible for making all these games that we enjoy are can't have any kind of job security and constantly got to look over their shoulders, what are we doing? I go, this industry is always touting record profits and revenue and all of these things. And again, this goes beyond gaming. This is just tech. This is just the world we're in, the economy. I get it. But it's just like, at what point do we stop? Why does it always you got to make more money than you did the year before? So now the people that work hard that got you that revenue and profit, they're the ones that have to suffer to your point, and no fault of their own. And that's what sucks about this. Look, if you're underperforming, you're doing things, that's one thing. But people that are doing their job and busting their ass and then they're shown the door, that's what sucks about all of this. Now, with that said, when we talk about the Activision Blizzard or just the Xbox layoffs, yes, there was going to be some reduction because, of course, when you do an acquisition like that, there's going to be some redundancies. It happens everywhere. This is not new. It's not isolated to Xbox or gaming or anything. This is in any merger you see this happen. Hell, my job, we made an acquisition. This was like, 4 years ago. Guess what? You don't need another security staff when you already got one. So the company we acquired, those people got let go. This is just how it works. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying that's how it works. So it's like a lot of the back and forth that I've seen online. Like when I said what I said, like there was one person, he freaking quote tweets a novel about this is more nuance than this. And you can't just talk about blah, 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 because he's trying to turn it into console war nonsense. And it's like, bro, I don't care. I care about the people, right? Same. Of course, it's more nuanced, but I'm not sitting here trying to debate that. I think what I said to him was like, today's not the day for this. You can have that discussion later on. Today is about the 1,900 people that got affected by a layoff, not to mention, what is the number now? Isn't like already 5,000 or whatever this year that have already been affected. Plus, when you throw in all the people that were affected last year that are still struggling, trying to find a job. It's like, have empathy for that. You got your video game, enjoy your video game, but you at the same time, you can have empathy for the people that got laid off and they're now have their lives disrupted, families to feed, all this stuff that they got to worry about now, all the stress and everything that goes with that. Bottom line, you have people in positions of leadership that make certain decisions, and this is not just Xbox thing, this is everybody that make certain decisions that when they work, great. Everybody wins, right? But when they don't, it's the people that did not have a voice in the room on those decisions that have to face the consequences of it. That's what sucks about the way tech works, the way our economy works, everything. So moving forward, was it Rami? I forget who was saying it. It sucks, but there was clearly a lot of overhiring during the pandemic, and now it's course correcting. And you're seeing people being forced to go back into the office after they were told, oh, you can live wherever you want. You can work remote. No. You got to move back here and you got to come in the office Monday through Friday. You know, it's like that sucks. That's a big disruption. Or you just get completely laid off because, you know, they're reducing things. I mean, ultimately, we're seeing a course correction. And this is why I was saying again, when we're talking about, oh, is Xbox going third party and no game showing up on other platforms? These games are super expensive to make now. Like, $50, $100, $200, $300 million to make a video game now. They got to make their money back. that's what's happening right now. And the layoffs suck because you would hope and you would think repurpose basically assets is the wrong word I'm trying to use here, but can we not repurpose these people into other roles or something and grow that out, you know, versus just completely laying them off. And then a year or two later, you're just rehiring people. Like you're having people in senior positions with high skill sets getting laid off. And then they rehire a year or two later, junior positions with less skill sets. Cause it saves money. That's what sucks about all this. And not to mention the junior people coming in aren't experienced as the senior people were. Does that equate to a lesser product? We obviously don't know until we get there. Overthink sucks. I mean, we can obviously argue this all day, every day, go back and forth, the whataboutisms of this or that or corporate greed and all of that. But it's, like I said, I try to live in the real world. I try to be logical about this stuff. I have empathy for the people that got laid off. But a small part of me understands why this is happening, even though I do not agree with it at all. Like I said, with the Activision one, there was going to be some reduction. But it looks like they took this as an opportunity that, yeah, we knew we had some redundancies. Yeah, we knew we had to do some layoffs. But we're going to lay off certain critical things that we no longer need as a company. Like, because you saw a lot of community managers getting laid off. You saw them laying off people in customer support. You saw them laying off people that were responsible for setting up retail, like physical sales, all that kind of stuff. So I don't like how it's happening. It's like I have no words for it because it is what it is, unfortunately. And what sucks, you're going to lose some very talented people that are going, why am I even in the gaming industry anymore? They're going to go somewhere else because job security, taking care of your family should always come first over trying to making a video game. And then you do all this hard work for 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 years, and then you're just let go, you know, unceremoniously. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, it's difficult, man. And here's the tough part. I know people that got laid off and some of them applying to the same jobs because they don't know. So now they have to compete against their friends.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get a job, you know, it's just tough, man. It's tough. And actually, I can't remember which episode it was. For those that are listening to this podcast, make sure to go back. Actually, I'm going to check right now. I'm going to tell you which episode it is. Cause I had a great conversation with, one of our friends, Diana. We had a whole episode all about layoffs. Let me see if I can find it. And it was back in November, I think it was. Oh, it was episode 1313. And we talked about video game layoffs. Great discussion. It was like a good 30, 40 minutes conversation about everything. You know? So, and we got deep. We got deep with the conversation. But thank you, Keon, for sending us questions, man. Paris, anything else before we wrap it up?
Go to the
after show. Yeah. All right.
I think that's it. I think I've preached enough this week.
All right. All right, guys. So thank you for listening. This episode of Gamertag Radio. We'll be back next week with more content. Until next time. We're out. Peace.
So we're in after.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.